Yep.
Okay. My name is Emma Chow. It is Tuesday, November 11th, 2008. We're at 2460 Gracia Way, Oro Grande, California. The interview is with Haruo Hayashi, a former internee at Gila River internment camp. We will be discussing his experiences as an internee during World War II with a focus on family dynamics and cultural identity. This interview is being conducted for the Ethnic Studies 410 class at California Polytechnic State University, San Luis Obispo, California, and will be archived in the South County Historical Society exhibit. So, first off, can I have you tell us your name and your age?
My name is Haruo Hayashi, and I am 82 years old.
So we're going to start off with some questions regarding pre-war family and personal background. So can you tell me a little bit about your family history?
Yeah, my dad immigrated to this country. I really don't know exactly what year, but it was around the World War One time. And he came from Kagoshima, Japan, and he was trained to be a school teacher there, but he figured the pay was too low and there's not much chance of getting advancement or making money. So he immigrated to America, and he came in through Mexico. And he crossed into U.S. and went to Salinas, California.
Why did he go to Salinas? Just because?
Because there's a lot of work there in Sugar Beach, mostly in Sugar Beach.
Mm.
So after he got enough money, he went to Seattle, Washington. That means that he went out of the country and he could come back in. Then he became a legal citizen.
Really? Okay. Was he married when he came?
No.
So how did he meet your mother?
He went back to Japan and got married and came back again.
Oh, okay. And where were you born?
I was born in... over here, Arroyo Grande.
You were born in Arroyo Grande?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there was no hospital here, so I had to go to Santa Maria.
Mm. But your family was...
My residence was here.
Oh, okay. So your parents had already established a home in Arroyo Grande?
Yeah. It's the same house that...
That you grew up in?
Yeah. No.
Oh.
Well, you know, you fixed it up
right.
Piece by piece.
But same area.
Same place. Same structure except, you know,
fixed
it
up.
Was a wooden side. You put up stucco. And
how many people or members of were in your family?
Like, how many?
Did you have any siblings?
I had one brother.
And what was his name?
Akil.
And so you grew up in Arroyo Grande?
Yeah.
And did you grow up around a lot of other Japanese American families?
Yeah. We had school, our grammar school and high school, especially high school, probably 20% was, yeah, I would say maybe 20% was Japanese American.
That's pretty good. Why did your father move from Salinas to Arroyo Grande?
Well, because he had a chance to farm himself over here rather than working for somebody else.
And can you describe your home life at all?
Yeah, I think it was normal. I mean... there's nothing special. we had our birthday parties, thing like that. You know, I had my good friends,
Did you
not Japanese, but our American friends.
Okay.
So.
So you interacted with.
Yeah.
Other races, and did you speak? So you spoke English at home. Or Japanese?
Yeah, I spoke English at home. Japanese with my mother mostly. My dad could understand a little half English, so by the time we were, you know, eighth grader or fifth grader,
mm-hmm.
we spoke mostly English. I guess you can go back earlier than that, but first grade, second grade, you know, when I went to first grade, I didn't know how to speak too much English, so had a hard time. But we had a neighbor girl that was going to school a couple years before me. She came down in our classroom once in a while to help me learn English or understand, so she can translate what she said to me.
Was it just you, or were there other like students that she helped also?
No, she just helped on me. Other students, we all had to fend for ourselves. But, you know, looking back, we must have learned English pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, they kept me in first grade. They held me back in first grade 1 year. So when the second year come to start my first year, I probably ended up being the smartest one in the class.
Perfect. Okay, so now we're going to move on to ask some questions about pre-war community. So can you describe your family's community activities or involvement
in
the community?
Community had the main recreation with the community, young men, young boys. They had a baseball team, and they played all over. Guadalupe, Fresno, San Francisco, L.A. You know, we had a team that traveled around. They were mostly high school students.
Were you on the team?
No, not me. My eyes were so bad that, you know, I couldn't participate in that kind of sport.
Did your family, like, sponsor them, or?
Huh?
Did your family sponsor them, or was it just, like, all
no,
the
there was
in the
that community, or the players sponsored themselves, but the parents, you know, they, their parents sponsored them, and, I don't know if they charged admission or not, because I don't remember that far. But that, and then we had Japanese school.
Okay.
And they had lots of, like play day and things like that.
Did you go to the Japanese school?
Yeah. I went about... maybe 5 years after school and Saturday morning.
So that kind of helped you learn or like stay consistent with your Japanese?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about your childhood friends and hobbies?
My 3-4 of my best friends were, I'll tell you their name was Gordon Bennett, John Loomis, Don Gullickson, you know.
And so you knew them from school?
Huh?
You knew them from school?
I knew them from first grade up. And they're still good friends of mine till now, even now. One died, but the rest of them, we go out to lunch, do everything. We still do that.
Oh, nice. And did you have, like, other friends from the Japanese school?
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of them. There's Fuka Harris, Fujimoto, you know.
And what were your hobbies? Like, what did you like to do?
My hobby, you know, it used to be stamp collecting.
Oh.
Stamp collecting, and I guess that's about all.
So you liked to stamp collect as a child?
Huh?
So do you still collect stamps?
No. I gave my stamp collection away. But, you know, like, oh, we used to go bowling once in a while.
Mm-hmm. What were your dreams and aspirations before the war?
You know, I couldn't tell you. Well, I didn't know myself before the war what I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were a farmer, and then usually you took over the family business.
Is that what you wanted to do?
No, I wanted to be a automobile designer.
Oh, that's cool.
But that was just a dream.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel, was there like pressure to take over the family business? Or was it just kind of like you wanted to?
Well, my dad always used to tell me that, you know, my eyes were bad, so you probably couldn't go to college because you got to read too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured, okay, then I'll do something else. So I stayed with the farm.
And what did your brother do?
When? At that time or now?
Both.
Well, he doesn't do anything now.
Did he help out with the farm before?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to move on to talk about immediate pre-war evacuation conditions. So what was your reaction to news about Pearl Harbor?
You know, I was recovering from appendicitis operation, and I was in bed when the news came over the radio. It kind of shocked me that we would go into war with Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I couldn't go to school right away. I had to take it easy for another week before I went back to school. But I was just wondering, you know, all that time I was wondering how they would treat me.
Right.
You know.
And so when you did get back to school, how did people act towards you?
Well, some of them were, you know, called us a Jap.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them were, everyone in my class was, didn't say anything too much. You know, they helped you out, whatever they can, you know. I mean, they still kept your friendship.
Mm-hmm. That's good. What were your thoughts about the evacuation orders?
What's that?
What were your thoughts about the evacuation orders?
I figured it's, you know, I hated to go, but there's order was order, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, most of the guys, head of the family, got picked up by FBI right away. Within 2-3 days of declaration of war. My dad was probably one of the very few persons that never got picked up.
Oh, he didn't.
No, he did not. And he was, and I would say he was more or less one of the leader of the community.
And he didn't get picked up.
He didn't get picked up.
Wow. So you were probably happy about that.
Yeah, we were happy about that because I was the oldest one, and that was, I probably was 15 years old. You know, I wouldn't know what to do. Right. They confiscated our farming. We had a lot of things to harvest, but the ranch that we were leasing from, they cut us out. We couldn't get into their field, even though we had the lease and we had a lot of crops ready to harvest.
Mm. So what did you do?
You just have to leave it there.
Can you tell me about how you and your family left the area? Like, did you consider the voluntary relocation? Or did you just...
Well, we didn't know where to go, so we just...
You just...
went evacuation as they told us to. Like over here, we left from here to across the Highway 1
mm-hmm.
into Rio Grande. Then next order was you gotta go across Highway 101.
Mm-hmm.
We were already across 101, so that was okay. And from then, from 101, then we had to go to Larry Assembly Center.
What did you take with you when you left for the camps?
Not a heck of a lot. What we can put in our suitcase.
Any specific items?
Your clothing. That's probably the only thing.
Mm.
You couldn't have camera, you couldn't have anything like that. All the rest of the stuff, furniture, everything was left to our friends here that took care of the place.
So the rest of your family's belongings were just watched over?
Yeah. There wasn't too much to watch. We had a car that one of our insurance agents took over and he kept it for us. And furniture and all, they were in here, but, you know, there wasn't too much. And I guess the guy that took over the place, house and ranch, and leased it out, rented it out, so...
So what did, when you came back, was everything still?
Well, everything was there, here.
Do you have an image or scene in your mind that you can describe about leaving for relocation?
Without what?
An image in your mind that you can describe about leaving for the relocation camps.
Leaving the relocation camp or...
Leaving for.
Yeah, well, you know, when we got on the bus from high school, we had all these... A lot of our friends came to say goodbye to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of sad. It kind of made you cry, but... At that time, we were too young to realize how bad it was. I mean, like my dad, they worked pretty hard for since 1930, you know, when the Depression time, they had made money. Then after Depression from 32 to, or maybe 35 to 39 was not too good. And by 1940, things started to pick up, and on just before the war started, we had a lot of things to harvest, which was a good price, where you could have made good money. So that's what we lost, and I guess thing. But my dad always used to say, "Well, it's one of those things." So that was the only thing that kind of I remember pretty good.
Mm-hmm. So besides your dad telling you, like, "Oh, that's life," did your parents give you any other advice about this experience?
Well, he told me this is after we got in the tent,
mm-hmm.
that we had to answer. They had to form that made you answer 27 or 28 to either you answer yes, yes, or no, no.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions was, would you fight for U.S. or the other one was, do you harbor relation was Japanese government in Japan. So if you answered, I guess no, that meant that you were all for our country.
Right.
So before I went to sign that thing, one way or another, there was quite a few older people around the barracks wanting to know, you know, trying to intimidate you to renounce your citizenship. But before I went in there, my dad told me that, you know, he says, you can answer it any way you want, but he says, I don't plan to return to Japan. So I was not gonna renounce my citizenship or anything, because I had three good friends still writing letters to me, and they were all going into service, and I didn't want to be left behind either. So that was the advice he gave me.
Good advice. did your whole family go to the assembly center together?
Yeah.
So everyone went. And then did all the families and like your neighbors within the assembly center get along?
Like, yeah. Yeah, we all got along. You had to. You know, you're all close together.
How long were you in the assembly center before you
moved to relocation center?
Yeah.
I forgot. 2 months? 3 months? I don't remember. All I remember in the assembly center was that I worked as a dishwasher or something like that at the kitchen.
Did you get paid for that?
Yeah. You got paid. How much was it? Was it $7 a month?
And what did you do with that money?
We kept it. I don't know what I did with it now.
Did your parents work also?
No.
Just you?
No.
Also, did you have access? This is just, we were talking about it in class. Did you have access to a phone? At the assembly center?
No.
Did you have access to a phone at the relocation camp?
No.
So your only form of communication outside was through letters?
And newspaper, I guess. Huh?
Mm.
And my friends in the assembly center from here to Tulare, so they came and visited us.
Okay. So now we're going to talk a little bit about camp life at the, you were at the Gila internment. So what were your first impressions about the camp?
It was first impression was that what a hellhole. You know, when we got there, the camp wasn't finished, that thing wasn't, you know, and it was dusty, windy, and hot. And,
yeah.
But got used to it. Only thing we had to do was we had to get a Sears and Roebuck catalog and order a cooler.
Oh.
You know, the water kind.
Oh.
You know, your water drips down into the fan. And it was a water-cooled cooler.
So did you use that for like, as a, like a refrigerator?
No, you used to keep your room
cool
enough to get to sleep.
How hot do you think it was?
Well, it got to be 100, 110, 115.
Gross. Can you describe a typical day at the camp?
You got up, went to breakfast, came back, went to school, came back, ate dinner, and if there was a lot of sunlight, well, they played baseball and everything until dark.
So it's kind of like normal.
Yeah,
life.
It's kind of normal.
Were friends from home, like around here, were they also at the same camp as you?
Not every one of them.
But some of them?
Yeah.
And then when you were at the mess hall, who did you eat with?
Who did I eat with?
Yeah.
Well, usually with the parents. Most of the time.
So did you feel like you had a pretty, you were pretty like close with your family?
Yeah, I think so.
Did your family dynamics change at all?
No. We were all probably on the same keel.
Did you enjoy camp?
You know, you could either hate it or you could like it. And I think the circumstance we were in, you had to make the best of it. So I made the best of it. I mean, I acquired a couple of real good friends that we still go out together.
You still keep in contact?
Huh?
You still keep in contact?
Yeah.
That's nice. Did you participate in any activities in the camp? Or did you have a job?
I didn't have a job in relocation center. We played at a basketball team. We had a baseball team, but with my eyesight, you know, I wasn't good at anything like that. My main thing was music.
Oh.
I played the clarinet and saxophone, so.
Did you play those before you went to camp, or did you learn how to play those?
No, I learned to play here before I went.
Mm.
So we started up our own big band or swing band, and we had great time. We saw everybody dancing, but we had to stay there and play. Afterthought, you know, we were stupid.
Why?
Either all them girls. we had fun.
That's good. So were you drafted for the war?
Yeah. I was first one drafted out of my camp.
Oh, wow.
And got drafted before I graduated. So I was happy because I missed out on taking all that final exam and all that stuff.
Were you proud to be selected to?
Yeah, but I couldn't figure out why they took me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I mean, they took me, so I went for physical, and they flunked me. Not on my eye, but he says, you got spot in your lung. And 1 week later, I got a notice saying that they read the wrong...
Oh, they read the wrong report.
Yeah, so he says, report, so you report it.
So can you describe some of your military experiences?
Yeah, I didn't have very long one, but you know, when I first got inducted, went down to Texas, and then went to Memphis, Tennessee. That way we stopped at Memphis, Tennessee. That's where I first learned that I was not colored, because you got off, you're on the bus, and some lady came up to me and told me, go tell your buddy that nobody should sit with a colored person like that. They didn't call it colored people, you know what they said. Anyway, I didn't know what the heck was going on. I just kept still and just sat there, and the bus came to a next stop sign. She got off and told me, I'm not going to ride in the same bus as you know what.
Mm-hmm.
So
you had never really seen an African-American person?
Oh, what? We probably saw, yeah, we probably saw 2-3 of them. But there are none living here.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we went to Los Angeles and you saw some of them walking on the sidewalk or something, you know. But, you know, there was no discrimination like that. Then I went into army camp. First thing, you want to go to the bathroom. So you start walking there, and the big old sergeant comes down and says, hey, you don't belong there. You go there. So after that, it was... And even in that military camp and during the training time, you know, Saturday, they have all the good band come down to you know, we were 442, we were the replacement. So they all come to camp to a dance, and there's not too many Japanese girls in Mississippi or Arkansas. So all the girls out of Mississippi and Arkansas used to come to our dance in Hattiesburg.
Hmm.
And we used to get all the good bands, you know, like something like Benny Goodman or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But all the colored guys, they didn't even get a band or anything. They used to come down and try to peek in and see who was playing.
So they had more discrimination than you did.
Oh, yeah.
Did you feel that as a Japanese, as the 442nd, did you feel any discrimination?
No. Not over there. Not at Hattiesburg. I just, the first bunch, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. And so where did you go after the war? Or like, how long were you in the military?
I was in the military 1 year. They sent me to POE, which is Port of Embarkation, mm-hmm. and going overseas. They flunked me over there and sent me back to camp to do something. Mm-hmm. And I was a chaplain's assistant for a while.
Oh.
That was a big joke.
What type of religion was it?
It was Methodist.
And so were you Methodist before you went to camp?
No, I was a Buddhist.
And
didn't make any difference.
Right.
Because this minister was Japanese too, Japanese American.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that didn't go was me, the chaplain, the first sergeant, and a couple other cadre that was gonna train the new group that come in. But there was no more new group of all Japanese. They all went to the later recruits, they all went to MIS.
Which is
military intelligence.
Mm.
So all the other guys later on, I guess, got shipped out. And I came to Monterey, and I hung around there.
Mm. What was your reception like when you got back to the camp from the war?
No, there wasn't too many people left in the camp anyway. So I got to the camp and we packed up and we went to Utah.
Your whole family?
Yeah.
So you left the camps early? Or was this during the time of relocation?
Yeah, where did I
put that was after the war. Yeah.
Okay. So. Did your family have any outside sources of income? Like
No.
Your farm income or anything?
No. My dad worked at the Gila River camp in Arizona.
Was he involved in agriculture there?
Yeah, he was one of the manager of one farm.
But did they receive any revenue from that, or it was just they got to?
No, he got paid $19 a month. So that fed the whole, you know, his section was raising watermelon and a few other stuff. So we had watermelon all summer long.
And so then you just saved that money?
Yeah. Then we went to Utah and worked enough money to come back over here.
So now we're going to move on to talk about immediate post-war conditions. So do you know the year that your family left the camp?
Well, it was 1945, I guess.
Okay. And was your family like one of the last ones to leave?
No, we weren't the last one. We were about the... I guess half of the camp was still there.
Mm.
We went to Utah.
Why did you move to Utah?
So we can work. My dad's friend was farming over there. And he got a job over there. So we went down there and worked. And we made enough money to come back here.
Did your mom help out with that?
No.
Work too?
She couldn't work.
So just the men?
Yeah, just me and my dad.
What about your brother?
I don't know. didn't go to things, so I guess he must have been going to school someplace, or maybe he was in the army by then. I really don't remember, you know.
Oh, okay. let's see. When you were, so what year were you able to come back to Arroyo Grande?
Late 1946. Yeah.
And so did you just come back to this house?
Yeah. There was a couple family came back earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they had more rough time.
But did you feel like you had a rough time transitioning?
No, I don't think so. After a couple, 3 months, everything subsided. And I guess we came back when it was subsided.
And so, did you own this land, or were you still leasing it?
No, we owned it.
You owned it. And was it, whose name was it under?
It was under Ben Fuchiwak.
And that, is that a friend?
That's one of the cousins.
Okay.
Because my dad couldn't own the land.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't own the land because I was too young when they bought the place.
Mm-hmm.
They bought it before the war. So.
How did the camp affect you and your attitude towards life?
Life goes on.
So it kind of just...
Yeah, well, Dad and I, we figured, well, heck, we can start all over again and we'll build it up. And we did.
Did anything become more important to you after camp? Like any organizations or any opinions?
Yeah, you know, I don't know, but they wanted me to join the Rotary Club. But I didn't want to be tied down to once a week meeting or something like that. But I ran for school board, and I beat a powerful guy. They couldn't believe it, though. You know. Well, I only ran because he said he was, you know, I knew him real good. And he said he wasn't going to run, so I said, okay, I'll run. I got a lot of kids in school, so. Then in the last minute, I guess somebody told him to run, so he's going to run. And I figured, oh, well, I might lose. But my boys campaigned like heck for me, and my friends, they all campaigned for me. And I won by about 20 votes.
Close one. So is that just for like the year?
No, 8 years.
Oh.
It was a 4-year term, and you had to run. You have to run for another 4 years, and that was enough.
What was the condition of the farm when you guys returned?
It was in good shape. A tractor was there. Everything was good, and three, four farmers over here. They said that you can use all my equipment anytime you want. Come in. Get it. If you want help, we'll help you. Grocery store guys, it says, we'll carry you. Meat market, fertilizer guys. So you can do anything on credit and pay us when you get ready.
That's
really
nice.
It was good.
It was
great. You know.
How does POVI play a role in your personal family and community life?
Well, POVI was formed in 1927 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and a lot of people were original owner, original member, I guess, the
right.
co-op. So then after the war, 3-4 years later, after we started farming, there was 7 as farmer here, so we started the co-op here again. We started up POVI again, and it grew and grew. Two of them either died or quit, so there's only 5 of us left. So that kept us going till now.
Mm-hmm. And still going strong?
Yeah, I guess so. One of my boys is doing the farming, so he's in there. I don't do too much anymore.
Well, this is a good transition then to our last kind of set of questions about the post-war and your personal family. So how and where did you meet Rosie?
I guess over here. Her dad and my dad was good friends while they were in Salinas or something like that. So they, he went one way and dad went the other way. And so they start visiting and they bringing her down here.
So this was after the war?
Yeah, it's after the war. 1950. Yeah, married 1953, so it must have been 1951 or something like that.
Okay. So you established your family here?
Yeah.
So you were taking care of the farm. What was she doing?
What was she doing?
Yeah, what did she do for work?
She had 5 kids to take care of.
Can you name all of your children?
Can I name? Yeah. John, Howard, Robert, Alan, and Eddie. And I got 7 grandkids. Allison, Jana, Lauren. Hello. Yeah, we going? What time? You gonna come over? Not really. Maybe, I don't know. You gonna pick us up or you want us to meet you there? Okay. Yeah, Lauren, Colin, and Kobe, and Michael. And once in a while, though, I can't remember their names. So.
It's a lot to remember. Did you make any effort to have your children know about their heritage and culture and like the Japanese language?
Yeah, you know, you try, but unless they get interested, they're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
My oldest one that's going to Irvine, she got interested in her senior year and she started collecting data and this and that. I don't know what good it did her, but well, she played basketball, went to Japan, so she learned something about Japanese culture. And so,
were there still Japanese schools around when you were raising your kids?
Yeah, for about 2 years.
And did you send them?
Yeah, but they disbanded for lack of interest. Because there's so many other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Little League baseball, this and that, basketball, baseball.
Have you maintained contact with people from the camps? You said you had still kept in contact with some.
Yeah, couple guys, but a lot of them. We had one big reunion over here in San Luis Obispo in 1990, and that was real good. Me and two of my buddies, we put it on, and we met a lot of people that we knew. In fact, we knew just about at least half of them anyway.
Do you feel that there's a strong Japanese American community now?
Do I what?
Do you feel that there's a strong Japanese American community now?
I don't think that there is as strong as it used to be before. I think one of the reasons is you have a lot of mixed marriage now. A lot of hapas. I think 50% is, especially over here where there's no other Japanese group.
Are you accepting of that?
I accept it. You have to. My two grandkids, one of them, I call them a Hapa because they call themselves. So I says, "Are you Japanese?" They tell me, "You Japanese first or Chinese first?" He tell me, "I'm Japanese first." So then he goes back to the Chinese grandparents and, "Yeah, you're my first grand." Yeah, that's good. That's great. I got four great, good daughter-in-law. One of them divorced, but I guess you always have one or divorce in the family.
What do you think about the reparations that were made?
Well, that was all right. I didn't get anything.
You didn't?
No, but my dad and my mother got. I was too young to get it, I guess, or I didn't qualify. But I don't care.
Yeah. Do you think that it was that gesture was enough?
You always want more. It's just like now, the bad economy, everybody wants. But where are you going to get the money?
And what did, I don't know if you know, but do you know what your parents chose to do with that money?
Yeah, he put it in the farm to pay some bills.
Might as well. If you were going to give advice to young people today, what would it be?
Life goes on. Just stay straight. Off the cuff, I would say to young people that is, do participate in something. I don't care what it is, but mainly if participating in sports. You got tennis, soccer, anything. Anything to keep them active. I've never seen any kid that go wrong that participated in sports and drama, band, and anything like that. You know, really, I can say that because I know of one that lazy, everything, got into drugs. But we had, my uncle was pretty thing about that. He says, get your kids in sports and you'll never go wrong.
Hmm.
And I believe that now, because all my kids do sports, you know.
Like basketball or baseball?
Yeah, basketball, baseball. And they're good at it. I mean, you know, it's your own grandkids, and you kind of brag about it.
Lastly, is there anything else that you'd like to say or add to this interview?
You know, I, you know, like, they all want to go to college, so, you know, if they really want to go, they go to college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they think they can do real good without going to college and make a good living, fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
And then, do you have any questions for me or Bridget?
Yeah, you guys are doing a lot of work.
Thank you.
No, it is, you know. I'm not, you know, I'm just giving you my own opinion. And, It's not because I want to give interview. It's because the history is fading away pretty fast. Like our generation, you know, I don't know, but you say the World War II veteran, what, 15,000 is dying every day, or...
And today is Veterans Day.
Mm-hmm. Or 1,500 dying every day. You know, then there's going to be too much left. A lot of my friends are dying off.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm next, but...
No, you look great.
I don't want to die yet.
No.
You know.
Well, thank you very much for allowing us to interview you. I think it's really good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. That was good.
I'll tell Roy. I think Roy
got
some.
You should tell him.
I think you got some.